are going to talk about the latest developments since President Trump ordered missile strikes against a Syrian airbase last week in response to a chemical weapons attack that was blamed on the Assad regime. And we are going to talk about the future of U.S.-Russian relations as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson prepares for his trip to Moscow this week. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We welcome your questions and reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Lots of headlines over the weekend, including Russia and Iran warning the U.S. that they will respond in force if their own red lines are crossed again in Syria. And Secretary of State Rex Tillerson on some of the Sunday shows saying that the missile strikes against Syria last week were a warning to other nations, including North Korea, saying that a response is likely if the U.S. thinks that they pose a danger. So we'll talk about all of this and more with our guest, Matthew Schmidt, a Russia expert, assistant professor of national security and political science at the University of New Haven. He was recently quoted in an Al Jazeera article titled, "What's Next for U.S.-Russia Ties After Syria Strike?" Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Well, I guess first off, what was your reaction when you heard that the United States had launched the missiles against the airbase in Syria?
Well, my first reaction was that this was a complete repudiation of almost everything that candidate Trump had said about how he would conduct foreign policy, both in Syria and in terms of Russia. Essentially, I felt like the president saw the pictures, unfortunately, of those gruesome pictures of the dead twins, and reacted emotionally, as I think any father would. I know as I did, but reacted without policy attached to the missile strikes, and so that's why I'm quite dubious about the effects of the missile strikes to change the regime behavior in Syria. And the likelihood of it getting us involved in ways that that we don't want to be involved.
Yeah. The reports I'm hearing now is that that airbase is, while it sustained damage, is kind of back up and running.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, too. There's a few things. We know that there were Russian personnel at that airbase. Russia was probably, in a sense, complicit in the chemical strike and that they must have known what was going on, and they certainly should have known that the chemicals were available, given the agreement that we signed with them to remove those 1,300 tons a couple of years ago. And this is clearly a response by Russia and by the regime to let the administration know that they won't be stopped.
Yeah. So, what do you think President Trump's ultimate goal was in launching those missiles, ordering that strike against Syria? Was it just as a punishment for the chemical attack, or is there a broader goal?
Well, I think it was, as far as we know, like I said, frankly, an emotional response, a feeling that something had to be done, and that this was a kind of punishment. I think that an ultimate goal in Syria is rapidly being constructed right now by Rex Tillerson in the State Department and by his top advisors inside the Oval Office, but I don't think it was launched with a clear goal in mind.
Yeah. Russia condemned the missile strike. Russian President Vladimir Putin said that the missile strike was an act of aggression against a sovereign state delivered in violation of international law under a far-fetched pretext. What are your thoughts on Russia's response?
I think Rex Tillerson, or previous Rex Tillerson, would have agreed completely. His quote from a few days ago saying that the Syrian people will determine the fate of Bashar al-Assad is absolutely in line with Putin's philosophy. Putin looks out into the world, and he argues that the number one principle for foreign relations is sovereignty, absolute, inviolable sovereignty. Part of the reason that he is in Syria is essentially because he didn't do anything in Libya. by which I mean when President Obama launched airstrikes and attacks in Libya that ended up in the ouster of Gaddafi and Gaddafi's death by the hands of the rebels, Moscow protested vociferously and said that's a violation of the core of international law. He sees that as the same situation in Ukraine, as the same situation in North Korea, and then the same situation in Syria. But Syria is where he can try to affect that philosophy, where he can try to make it real.
Yeah, there was news over the weekend that Russia and Iran have warned the U.S. that they will respond with force if their own red lines are crossed in Syria. What do we make of that?
I'm not sure. I don't know exactly what their red lines are, except that they would argue that the U.S. Shouldn't be bombing the regime because that's, again, outside those bounds of how they view international law. I think the real red line is that Iran and Russia have decided that that Bashar al-Assad will remain in power, that a post-war Syria will have the Assad family in control, and they are rejecting any possibility of regime change.
Yeah. Well, there was some reported mixed messages going on from the U.S. Where Nikki Haley was saying that Assad has to go, and Rex Tillerson was saying something along the lines of, well, you know, we'll work through international channels to perhaps have that happen. What do you see happening?
Well, I think that's more of the acting without intention, right, without a deeper strategy or a policy attached to it. And I think you see that within the administration. It's not clear that people are talking to each other. It's the same situation you have with the NSC, right? So under Obama, essentially, the NSC was a coordinating team. And so he would say, for instance, you know, let's look at the Syria situation, and the NSC would run off and start doing studies, and they would reach out to the other, 17 or so intelligence agencies, and they would have meetings over several weeks, over several months, and they would say, CIA, you know, what do you think? What's your take on this? Defense Intelligence, what's your take? State Department, what's your take? And they would bring back to the Oval Office, a report saying this is what people think, these are the key questions, and then the president would give his input again, and it would go back, and they would sort of build a consensus policy that by the time action was taken, you know, everybody was on board, they understood where the president was going. And I think what you have here is a much more hierarchical system where essentially the president and a small coterie of advisors inside the Oval Office makes up its mind to do something and then hands off that order to the NSC, which then hands off that order to the rest of the government.
We just heard in NPR News that the G7 nations are meeting in Italy, and they are pushing for the ouster of, or at least I should say, they are pushing for Russia to drop its backing for Assad or face new tough sanctions. What's your analysis of this?
I'm dubious at the start. This is the first that I've heard of that with any kind of detail. It depends on what the sanctions are. So it's not clear that the sanctions we've been imposing on Russia have had much effect on Putin's decision making, which, after all, is the point. In 2013, we have reports in the intelligence community that show that Russia essentially was evaluating the Syrian situation and making a decision about whether or not it would back Assad. And at that point, it basically went to Assad and said, look, you have to show us that you can win this war. Can you pull this thing off? And over the next couple of years, Assad managed to do that. And then Russia came in a big way in 2015 and said, okay, this is our horse. We're going to ride him to victory. And, so I think that decision's been made by the Kremlin. Now Putin is willing to adapt his strategy for his larger end. So I don't think it's impossible that he would jettison Assad. But if he does, he's going to pick his successor. And, of course, the bigger story in Syria isn't Russia, which is running the air campaign, but it's Iran, which is essentially providing the entire army for Bashar al-Assad. And so Iran controls more of the outcome of this conflict than I think Russia does.
Yeah. Well, with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is headed to Moscow. Give us a preview as to what we can expect.
I think it'll be contentious. Tillerson is locked in right now on having to push back on Putin and make sure that that is seen in the conference. So he'll likely do something in public, say something that will give the administration the opportunity to say that they're being, you know, as we like to talk about, right, tough on Putin, tough on Russia. I'm not sure what happens behind the scenes, because I'm not sure that Tillerson actually believes that we should be tough on Russia. I think that Tillerson is basically in line with Putin's values here. And if you look at what he used to do with ExxonMobil, he essentially was supporting this idea that sovereignty is the number one basis for international law, because he had to do that in order to get drilling rights in places where you had dictators and less savory regimes. So that was a natural policy for him to follow in that industry.
We'll pick up on this after news. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then welcome your thoughts and questions after this news. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest expert about what's next and what has happened since President Trump ordered missile strikes against a Syrian airbase last week. Talking with him also about the future of U.S.-Russia relations, as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is going to Moscow this week. And we wonder what questions you have, what reactions you have, what concerns you have. Did you agree with the decision to launch missiles in Syria? What would you like to see the U.S. do next? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Matthew Schmidt. He's a Russia expert and assistant professor of national security and political science at the University of New Haven. He was recently quoted in an Al Jazeera article titled "What's Next for U.S.-Russia Ties After Syria Strike." Professor Schmidt, I wanted to ask you a little bit about other comments that Rex Tillerson made in interviews over the weekend, including when he said that the strikes were sending a message not only to Syria to knock off the use of chemical weapons, but also to other countries that pose a danger, and he included North Korea at the same time. An aircraft carrier was diverted and is headed to the Korean peninsula right now. This is concerning.
Yeah, so it makes sense that, you know, he would say that this is a message to other states doing things, something like what Assad was doing, although I would argue that the North Korean regime is not gassing its people. It's starving them slowly, of course. But, sending the aircraft carrier makes sense. It's a provocative move, and the question is, what does the Trump administration plan on doing in North Korea over time? And, of course, the North Korean regime does this every time there's a new American administration. They launch as many missiles as they can. They threaten nuclear explosions, tests, and things like that to try to test the regime and to try to test the administration and see how it's going to respond. And so the Trump administration has decided to respond by pushing up against North Korea. But it's not particularly clear, what the aircraft carrier would be capable of doing in order to stop, further missile shots towards Japan. This is just sort of saber rattling at this point.
Another interview, Secretary of State Tillerson was taking a hard line against Russia, according to an article in the New York Times. He called the country incompetent for allowing Syria to hold on to chemical weapons and accused Russia of trying to influence elections in Europe using the same methods that Russia used in the United States. How surprising is this to you?
It's surprising to me that Tillerson would necessarily say these things out loud. The fact that they are happening is not surprising to me at all. We've known for some time that Putin's regime has been engaging in this kind of, election manipulation. I just finished a piece. If your listeners are interested, it's called "Putin Was the First Alt President" in the Georgetown Journal of International Affairs. And the idea there is that Putin was really the first one of this group of potentially Le Pen or Orbán in Hungary or Trump now in the United States, sort of coming from the alt fringes of the rightist movements in their states. And Putin was the first one to do this when he took power in 1999 and then in his subsequent elections, where he turned the country to the far right on the basis of a nationalist, an extreme nationalist ideology. And so that's what Putin is doing here, and Tillerson is pushing against that insofar as he can. But that's also what Assad is doing in Syria, and Putin agrees with it. And again, it goes back to this question of Putin's overarching philosophy, his overarching ideology in North Korea and in Syria and in Ukraine, is to establish this idea that the West, that the United States, cannot commit regime change like it did in Iraq, like it did in Libya, right? Which it blames, or like Putin accuses Hillary Clinton of trying to do, right? Falsely accuses of trying to do in Ukraine. So he's trying to set up this idea that the anti-West, led by him, is against the ability of the West to intervene in the sovereignty of these states that are doing terrible things to their own people.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So we are asking you what you think of what's happened since the U.S. Launched those missile strikes against the Syrian air base, and what you want to see happen now. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We are talking with Matthew Schmidt, who's a Russia expert and an assistant professor of national security and political science at the University of New Haven. Ruth says the launch of missiles was a completely irresponsible, dangerous move. We will all pay the price. She put a question mark on that. Well, are we all going to pay a price for this, Professor Schmidt?
I do think that it was largely irresponsible in that it is not likely to have any meaningful effect on the regime's decision to launch chemical weapons again. I think you'll see that the regime has to respond to the airstrikes by doing something else. I'm not sure that we're all going to pay a price if the caller suggests that there's some sort of larger war that's going to happen in the Middle East. I think we're still pretty far from that, although it certainly does move us closer.
Judy on Facebook says, it sounds like Russia and Iran are teaming up against the U.S. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. Again, it goes back to this idea of trying to prevent Western states, Western alliances, from engaging in regime change in different parts of the world. They are establishing their right to do what they want to do inside their territorial boundaries. And that's important to Iran because, remember, back in the Gulf War, the phrase was, well, everybody's going to Baghdad, but real men, quote, right, are going to go to Tehran. That was a common saying inside the military, inside the Bush White House. And so, Tehran knows that it's on that list, that short list of a Trump administration for regime change again, and it wants to establish that that's not going to happen.
Yeah. After the missile strikes last week, we actually did a program where some callers were suggesting that this was a distraction, that this was to try to take attention off of the probe in Congress that is going on between the Russian meddling in our election and possible Trump campaign or Trump administration ties to Russia. What is your reaction to that?
I'm pretty dubious of those kinds of claims. I think the much more likely claim is that this was just an emotional response of a president who's never actually had to face the effects of that kind of power, the kind of power that he wields, the kind of power that other leaders of states wield, and that the reality of international relations is. So I think it was just mostly an emotional response. And plus, H.R. McMaster, the new national security advisor, I have the highest respect for. And so I have to believe that he and his new, his new head of the Russian section there, Fiona Hill, who's extraordinary, would have been very careful to push back on these sorts of, these sorts of ideas if it was just a distraction.
So Steve Bannon, was removed from the National Security Council right before the missile strike against Syria. And there are reports that he was very against this missile strike. What are your thoughts on this?
It makes sense. The one thing about Steve Bannon, you know, love him or hate him, is that he has a consistent, if errant, philosophy about things, and this goes completely against that philosophy, as it does for Tillerson and as it does for everything that Trump said when he was a candidate. And so I imagine that was exactly the reason that he was protesting this, that this was not a policy that was consonant with the idea of putting America first.
We have Robert on Facebook who says the U.S. needs to back off and mind its own business. The U.S. has been pushing NATO closer and closer to Russian borders, and now they're pushing North Korea. It's irritating the world. Do you agree with that?
I don't know if it's irritating the world, but it's certainly irritating Vladimir Putin. And again, that's exactly the kind of statement that Putin has made in the past. That's the kind of statement that both Tillerson and, more importantly, Bannon has made in the past. You know, if I can digress a little bit, if you shift over to Ukraine and you ask, for instance, but let's go back for a second. Let's go to Syria and say, well, why is Russia in Syria? And one of the common reasons is that people say, well, they have a naval base. It gives them access to a warm water port, that old trope about, say, Peter the Great and warm water, and they have a new air base. And that's why they're in Syria. But I think the dominant reason they're in Syria is, again, to establish this idea of preventing regime change in the Middle East, to protect their ally, Iran, from that regime change. And then if you jump out of there and you look at Ukraine, the revolution in Ukraine started in 2013. They deposed the Moscow-backed president in early 2014, and then Crimea was taken, and then the war was started in the east in the Donbass region. And people then would say things like, well, why is Putin in Ukraine? Is he there for strategic reasons, right? And they would say, well, he needs the Crimea for his naval base in the Black Sea. But the reality that any military professional will tell you is that Russia has a major naval base just a short distance away in Novorossiysk, and that if there was any major war in the Black Sea, just about everything on and under the ocean, under the sea there, would be shot down and sunk, you know, in half an hour's time from aircraft flying out of Turkey on our side of things and from aircraft flying out of Russia. So Crimea is not that important. So the question is, well, why is he there? What's he really grabbing in Ukraine? And I think the answer has much more to do with ideology, much more to do with this idea that Russia is what Putin calls a Eurasianist state, which means that it's not European and it's not connected to European liberal values. If you go back to the 2014 Sochi Olympics and the statements that he made, for instance, against gays, right, homosexual athletes, and these kinds of things, these laws, these onerous laws that he's passed in Russia. And he says, well, that's the liberal West. We don't believe in those kinds of things. We don't believe in gay rights here in Russia because we're different. And he says, and we're not Asian, right? We're not like China. We're this unique, special civilization that's built around the Orthodox Church. And the key here is that Ukraine has deep religious and ideological importance to Vladimir Putin, because that's where the Russian state started. The Russian Empire started in Kiev. It did not start in Moscow. So I think the real reason that he's in a place like Ukraine is not for strategic reasons, it's for ideological reasons. And the real reason he's in Syria is primarily for ideological reasons, again, to establish this idea of keeping the West out, to establish this idea in Ukraine of keeping the West out, preventing regime change in Ukraine, because if regime change takes in Ukraine and is successful, it is Russian-speaking Ukrainian intellectuals that will be the place where the protest movements move into Moscow and end up toppling Putin's regime.
So then it's pretty unlikely that Putin would back off and stop supporting Assad.
No, I don't think so. I think, again, it's a possibility if he sees that in the context of a particular event, particular time, a week or 6 months or 2 years from now, that he can do it and put his own person in place. But he will not allow Assad to be killed by the West. The likely result here would be that Assad would be, allowed to retire somewhere in Russia, and he would put in place someone else who essentially establishes this idea of sovereignty and protects Iran and protects Russia's bases.
Well, let me ask our listeners, so what do you make of all this? Do you think that Assad should be removed from Syria somehow? Or do you think that should be a priority of the U.S.? Nikki Haley, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, said that the departure of Assad is a U.S. priority. But Secretary of State Rex Tillerson asserted that Assad had undermined his legitimacy as a leader, but said that defeating ISIS is the top U.S. goal in Syria. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So you get to advise President Trump what to do next regarding Syria. What do you advise? We have open lines for you. So, Professor Schmidt, what should, I mean, if you had the ear of the president, is the U.S. priority to defeat ISIS in Syria, or is it to remove Assad?
I think our priority has to be to defeat ISIS and not Assad, because it's unclear that there's anybody you can hand power off to that is any better than Bashar al-Assad in the first place. And the reality is that the attempt to try to do something like that would definitely draw in Russia and Iran, and these are things that just our interests there are not great enough to take on that kind of risk. It's interesting that you bring up ISIS, though, because of the recent bombings in Egypt over the weekend at the Coptic churches. Much of ISIS, as it existed as a territorial unit in Syria and Iraq, is now gone. And those bombings and others are essentially a reversion back to the way ISIS used to operate before it controlled territory in Syria. So I think you're likely to see more of these kinds of things as the structure of the terrorist group evolves back down to some kind of a splinter system.
Yeah. We have just a minute before news break. It's said that, is Assad keeping ISIS at bay in Syria?
No, I don't think so. Most of what's happening against ISIS is what we're doing, what the Iraqi army has been able to do inside Iraq and across the border, what Turkey's doing.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about what has happened in Syria with the U.S. missile strikes against the Syrian airbase and what has happened since, and talking some about the future of U.S.-Russia relations in light of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's visit to Moscow this week. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Matthew Schmidt, a Russia expert, assistant professor of national security and political science at the University of New Haven. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Listening to the Ideas Network, I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about how the strike against Syria affects Russia and the U.S. relationship, and we are welcoming your thoughts and your questions about what has happened and what should happen now. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. We are talking with Matthew Schmidt, a Russia expert and assistant professor of national security and political science at the University of New Haven. He was recently quoted in an Al Jazeera article that was titled, What's Next for U.S.-Russia Ties After Syria Strike? Let's take some calls. We have a caller in New Berlin with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I'm a former U.S. Army soldier. I'm retired. I just personally feel that we had to set a precedent and just It wasn't done under Obama. I didn't vote for Trump, however, but I feel that we needed to set a precedent and reestablish that the use of chemical weapons is not an acceptable norm for the battlefield, because if we don't take some sort of positive, not necessarily positive, but affirmative action, that we're going to say that the use of chemical weapons is still prohibited and banned under international law, we're going to see chemical weapons return to the battlefields around the rest of the world in other situations and may even end up as dirty bombs in cities in Western Europe and the United States. And I think that since World War One, we pretty much have made that a red line, and I think that's the red line that all countries, all civilized democracies need to uphold.
A response, Professor Schmidt?
Yeah, I appreciate the caller's concern. It's very well put. I simply disagree with the idea that is called sort of the credibility theory, right? That if we don't do something, then other places, other dictators around the world will continue to use these kinds of weapons. It's not clear that's true at all. If you're a dictator, then you are fundamentally not leafing through your annals of international law and saying, oh, oops, this is illegal, I can't do this. So it's not clear that bombing someone like Assad is even going to stop Assad from using these weapons. Again, as for Obama, if you remember, he actually sought the ability to respond to the regime's first chemical weapons attack, but that was denied by Congress, and then he decided to follow along with what Congress wanted to do, and that was the reason for not going in. But he sort of had the same instinct that Trump did.
So far, how do you read the reaction from Congress? Sounds as though, for the most part, both sides of the aisle support what President Trump did.
It's mixed. There are Democrats that are, you know, saying that, it was an illegal action by the administration, that they needed to seek congressional approval like President Obama did. I think that's a pretty specious argument. Technically, it's probably legally true, but it hasn't been followed for most of the 20th century. We've given, you know, wide latitude to executives to use military force.
Yeah. Let's go next to Greg in Waukegan, Illinois. Hi, Greg.
Hi, good morning. I have a question for Professor Schmidt. What should be the reaction of the EU? Should they help us join in this cause? After all, just a little over 100 years ago, there was chemical warfare in World War One, and that led to the international ban on chemical and biological weapons. So why haven't we seen, or should we see, more of a reaction from the EU? Thank you. And I'll take your comment up here.
Thank you. That's a great question, and thank you for bringing up the anniversary of World War One. I've been trying to draw more attention to that here at the University of New Haven, too, with my students, who sort of pretend that it never existed or don't know anything about it, really. The problem is that the EU doesn't have a military. They have considered doing this at several points, but they've not done it. So what there is in Europe is NATO, and NATO hasn't been asked to engage in Syria. NATO is still pretty much overwhelmed by its involvement in Afghanistan, which is its first actual deployment, since the creation of the alliance. There are, however, EU countries that are helping us in Syria. Probably the biggest, again, is the United Kingdom, of course, which is only going to be an EU country for another couple of years.
Just as a plug, I believe the PBS series on World War One is it starts tonight and goes maybe for 3 days this week. So it's called The Great War. So if you want more information on that. Jake in Oshkosh is with us. Hi, Jake.
Good morning, Joy. I wanted to comment on something. I consider the whole affair of the bombing to be a big nothing burger. And the reason I say that is because the Trump administration forewarned the Russians in advance that they were going to do this. And I assume the Russians told the Syrians. And I think it was more of a message for President of China in Mar-a-Lago, where Trump was hosting when the event was done.
Why do you think it was a message to Chinese President Xi?
With regard to North Korea.
Oh. All right. So, can you comment on, we told Russia maybe told Syria, this maybe was just more of a message to China?
I think that it's absolutely clear that, in fact, we told Russia ahead of time in order to deconflict our aircraft with their anti-air defenses, and surely they passed that information on to Assad. I think it was also clear, I mean, Assad's no dummy, right? You have to respect your enemy on this. As soon as we saw public reports of the president's reactions, he had to have thought that there was an increasing likelihood that there would be some kind of an attack. So, I think in the sense that, as the caller put it, a great nothing burger, a lovely Midwesternism, and I'm from Kansas, so go Jayhawks.
Sorry.
So, I think he's absolutely right there. As far as it being some kind of signal to the Chinese in regards to North Korea, I think that kind of stuff is tacked on after the fact. I don't think it plays into the decision to engage in the attack.
So Russia, though, said they shut down that line of communication with the United States following the missile strikes, the very line of communication that the U.S. used to tell them this was happening.
So that's extremely worrying. It makes it a lot more dangerous to put our planes in the air because their anti-air capabilities could definitely bring down American planes. And it essentially acts as a defense against us doing this sort of thing again. And it's pretty cheap for the Russians to do it. They don't have to put their aircraft up. They just have to turn their radars on. It makes the chance of something worse happening between our forces and their forces much greater.
Yeah, so what happens if we, accidentally shoot down a Russian plane or something?
Well, it's more the other way around. It's more that the Russians would shoot down one of our aircraft with their anti-air capability. Nobody knows, right? Those are the kinds of scenarios that everybody is trying to avoid. And by turning on their radar systems and shutting down this channel to say what that channel means is that we give the Russians, this is our flight plan. And these kinds of planes are going to be coming in these numbers at these altitudes at these speeds. So when you see them on your radar, don't fire. Right? So when that information goes away, now, Russian anti-air crews are inclined to pull the trigger and fire.
Matt in Wausau emails, the attack on Syria was just another diversion to slow the investigation into President Trump's Russian ties in the election. It's working, too. All the talk about the investigation has been shelved. I find it shameful that attacking sovereign nations is the only bipartisan agenda we can agree on. Now, you addressed this earlier. You didn't think that was the reason behind the strike, but what are your thoughts into this investigation? Let's put it this way: was Russia meddling in the U.S. elections,
sure.
And is it doing the same thing in France and Germany?
So, yes to both. I think the evidence is absolutely clear that Russia was meddling in U.S. elections. The question is, who knew about it? Was it coordinated somehow with the Trump campaign? And what was the nature of the meddling? Let's deal with the last first. The dominant way that Russia was affecting votes in the American election, and this does the same thing in Europe, right, in France or in Hungary or other places, or for the Brexit vote, is by the creation of fake news and then by using these things called bots, these software robots that go around and amplify the number of hits that fake news stories have in order to drive them to the top of your Google search or your Facebook feed or this kind of thing in order to make sure that more and more people read them. And this is targeted towards certain demographic groups that they think, are likely to follow what's in the news stories in order to guide their voting. That's not significantly different from what domestic political consultants do, right? The whole point of a campaign is essentially to, manipulate you into voting for that candidate. I use manipulation in sort of just a generic value-free way. The problem is it feels really ugly and icky when it's a foreign state that's doing it to you. Next is the question of whether or not they were manipulating the election directly through changing votes and voting machines. there is a professor at the University of Michigan, I believe it was, who has indicated that there are reasons to consider whether or not that happened, at least in parts of Michigan. But that in he's not saying it did happen. He's just saying there's some quirky statistical things, and there's two versions of an explanation for it. One is completely benign, and it's just statistics, and the other one is somebody's messing with the machines. We have no evidence to show that. My personal opinion, knowing the Kremlin and this regime, is that if they could do it, they would do it. But even if they did, I would imagine that the effects of that kind of direct voting machine manipulation would be far less than the broader fake news and news amplification effects that go on, these things that are called active measures.
And very briefly, because we only have a minute left, the investigation into that and any possible collusion with the Trump campaign is not over, right?
No, it's not over. I think that the House investigation is pretty much corrupted at this point because of the actions of Devin Nunes, the former chair. I think the Senate investigation is going to continue and will be a credible investigation. And the big one to follow is going to be the FBI investigation, which has been kept very closely under wraps for now.
Yeah. In our final 30 seconds, what are you going to be watching for this week?
I'd be watching for, more of a robust response coming from the Assad regime or from Russia in response to these strikes. And I would be watching the statements coming out of the White House about the attacks against Coptic Christians in Egypt and somehow linking that back to ISIS in Syria.
Thank you very much for being with us. Matthew Schmidt is an assistant professor of national security and political science at the University of New Haven. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.